Chapter 40 Malice Unleashed. This malicious animal instinct, of which the dragon is the type, incites mortals to kill morally and physically, even their fellow mortals, and worse still, to charge the innocent with the crime. Mary Baker Eddy, 1907. The Concord Daily Patriot published an action filed by Streeter and Hollis on April 2nd in its entirety, the essence of which was State of New Hampshire, Superior Court, Merrimack in particular, April term, 1907. Mary Baker G. Eddy, by her next friends, George W. Glover, Mary Baker Glover, George W. Baker, versus Calvin A. Fry, Alfred Farlow, Irving C. Tomlinson, Ira O. Knapp, William B. Johnson, Stephen A. Chase, Joseph Armstrong, Edward A. Kimball, Herman S. Herring, Louis C. Strang. Motion for leave to intervene and be substituted as plaintiff in place of said next friends. Wherefore, the said Henry M. Baker, Archibald McClellan, and Josiah E. Fernald, as said trustees, pray that they may be substituted as, quote, next friends, end quote, or as plaintiffs in lieu of the, quote, next friends, end quote, now of record, and that they may be permitted, under the supervision and advice of the court, to prosecute said suit according to its merits and as the protection of the trust property and estate may seem to require. Streeter and Hollis, solicitors. Henry M. Baker, Archibald McClellan, Josiah E. Fernald. On the same day, April 2nd, Mrs. Eddy wrote to her church, Miscellany, page 135, quote, "Fret not thyself because of evildoers," end quote. At this period, my demonstration of Christian Science cannot be fully understood theoretically. The leader's footsteps at this period were so far beyond the comprehension of the field that she could only direct them to the study of, quote, atonement, end quote. Much more than a decade earlier, when Mrs. Eddy went to Pleasant View, she told the students who were with her then that she was receiving revelations every day, which she could not tell them because they could not bear it yet. From that time on, she had gone higher each day. Many students had gone higher too over the years, but none was even near the leader's demonstration. If even one had been, perhaps her prayer might have prevailed. The best she could do for them was to call as many advanced scientists as were willing to come to her that they may gain a little more spirituality from her teaching and her example, and that they might develop greater strength to meet the fire of mesmerism. These dedicated students all thought that they were there to help the leader. They had little comprehension that she was working for them in order that they and her great cause might free the world from its enslavement to materialism, and that her dear students might be able to stand in the hour of trial. Protection was emphasized in her lesson of April 5th. Hold your thought in truth, life, love. While doing so, can you be touched? No. Then hold there. This will destroy all evil. This is the period in which it must be done. I live with the Bible. I have not another thing on earth to be one with but the Bible and science and health. I, the Bible and science and health, the Trinity, three in one. In her lesson of April 6th, she said, quote, "It is all summed up in a few words. Love, life, truth, God is all there is." End quote. On April 6th, Chandler, to counteract Streeter's petition of April 2nd, filed a supplemental bill for the five, quote, next friends, end quote, now including Fred W. Baker and Ebenezer J. Foster Eddy, against Mrs. Eddy's three trustees, Baker, McClellan, and Fernald, making 13 defendants in place of the original 10. Not counting Mrs. Eddy herself, who was, of course, the one main defendant in the case. This supplemental bill also asked, 2. That the said defendants, Baker, McClellan, and Fernald, be required to transfer and deliver to the receiver or receivers all the property of the said Mary Baker G. Eddy, taken possession of or received by them under the provisions of said deed, signed March 6, 1907. On April 15th, the trustees filed their answer with the court. While this was going on, the events of spiritual import were Mrs. Eddy's lessons to those in her home. On April 8th, she may have sensed a tendency to give up, for she told them to want to die to get out of this constant struggle was of no use. Quote, "For if you should do so, you would still have to keep at it until accomplished." End quote. She also said to Lydda Fitzpatrick on that day, quote, "Lydda, you have done beautifully since you have been here. Have helped me so much." End quote. On April 9th, she told her students, "When we realize the allness of God, that He is life, truth, love, omnipotent, omnipresent, infinite principle, all will be accomplished." The leader's lesson of April 11th included, quote, "I and the Father are one," end quote, in its spiritual sense, means one with the divine principle, God, the only I. Not materially through the personality of Jesus, asking in His name, but spiritually, yes. The oneness with the Father, the true individuality. As you rise to spiritually understand that, you lose your sense as an I in matter and gain your true selfhood in spirit. This brings the divine health, which is not dependent on the body, but is of the Father, forever the same. The students at Pleasant View were gaining ground spiritually each day, and the enemy continued to attack their leader and her teachings, most especially her teachings regarding malicious animal magnetism. Chandler and Peabody maintained an upper room at the Parker House in Boston, where those opposing Mrs. Eddy were encouraged and often paid to give vent to their hatred and lies against her. At the same time, loyal Christian Scientists continued with letters of love and support to their leader, such as this of April 14th from Mary Tomlinson. "The first paragraph of your miscellaneous writings has been very precious to me. Today it comes to me as applying to you. In the present, quote, storm and tempest, end quote, of error, you are, quote, safely sheltered in the strong tower of hope, faith, and love, end quote. You are God's nestling, and, quote, he will hide you in his feathers till the storm has passed, end quote. Her dear students felt sure their leader would be protected from the storm, but they needed to learn more about defending and protecting themselves from the wickedness that was attacking their leader. Sue Harper Mims had seen, quote, the important seeming forces of the loosened occultism of the human mind, end quote. But Irving C. Tomlinson was soon to have a very severe lesson in that regard. A very few days after his sister's letter of April 14th to Mrs. Eddy, Mary Tomlinson was mesmerically drawn to the Parker House in Boston, where she committed suicide by throwing herself out of a window from a room directly beneath the one in which Chandler, Peabody, and associates were conferring. In the leader's lesson of April 18th, she included, if there was an assassin which could overpower you, it would be better for you to know what he was doing, so as to be better prepared to meet it. When Calvin Hill recalled in later years the work the leader had had him do for the lawsuit, he wrote, quote, Mrs. Eddy pointed out the need for specifically handling hypnotism in this case, end quote. Edwin G. Eastman was representing the New Hampshire defendants, Calvin A. Fry, Irving C. Tomlinson, Herman S. Herring, and Louis C. Strang. Eastman was also Attorney General for New Hampshire and an associate of the firm of Eastman, Scammon, and Gardner. When interviewed early in the case, he made the following press statement. Our clients have been charged with a very serious breach of confidence in connection with their alleged relations with Mrs. Eddy, and among other things that they have misappropriated funds and wrongfully diverted monies from her estate for their own benefit. We have no reason to doubt that these charges are wholly without foundation, and the defendants will ask and demand that these charges shall be fully investigated by the court. And to that end, we shall do what we reasonably can to bring about that result at the earliest practicable time. On April 17th, Eastman filed with the court the answers of the four New Hampshire defendants. But as the case was not consummated in the April term of court, Eastman became associated with Streeter and Hollis, representing Mrs. Eddy. Honorable Oliver Branch replaced Eastman in representing the New Hampshire defendants. The answers of the other defendants were also filed on April 17th. On April 20th, Mrs. Eddy wrote to the one student she felt would be able to stand under the fire of mesmerism, Augusta Stetson. Your dear letter and love encourage me. I cannot thank you enough for this, but do know that your life is blessed and blessing others because of it. This comforts me and best expresses my gratitude, therefore. Oh, may you be spared, quote, his cup, end quote, if thus it can be, and fulfill his righteousness. So far he has spared you, and mine may suffice for this period. P.S. Pardon haste and brevity. I have much to think of, and little that I can write at present. Mrs. Stetson had written Mrs. Eddy earlier in April about the Peace Congress, scheduled to be held in New York City, April 14th through 17th, which had requested all the churches to send representatives. But she may not have known that Mrs. Eddy had already asked William D. McCracken to attend the conference as representative for the Christian Science periodicals. The Congress's executive committee had also asked all New York churches to hold meetings on April 14th to explain the purpose of the Association for International Conciliation, which Mrs. Stetson planned to do with the leader's approval. Mrs. Eddy did even more than approve. She authorized a peace meeting at the Mother Church. On the evening of April 14th, every seat in the extension was filled, and over 1,000 stood to hear the addresses of John D. Long, ex-governor of Massachusetts, William Lloyd Garrison, and ex-secretary of the Navy, John L. Bates. But the real progress for the only true peace for the world was going on at Pleasant View. On April 18th, the leader said to her disciples, "The way-shower must explore the way. You learn that way by that experience. You are learning now from my experience. If the work had been done in the time of Jesus, it would not have to be done now. But the disciples did not do their part. They were not obedient to him. They questioned what he was doing, did not understand, and it was not done. So it must be done now. We can enter into immortality here on earth and now and overcome death. We must do it." The leader knew this could have been done in Jesus' time if his disciples could have understood and supported him. She knew, too, that she could do it now if her disciples could understand and support her. And on March 10th, God had told her that that would not be the case, that her disciples, too, would be left alone. Nonetheless, she kept telling them what could be done and what must be done. And the work she was doing was encircling the globe. Letters of support were coming not only from every state in the Union and from Europe, but from as far away as South Africa, South America, and Australia. Surely this letter of April 18th from Sydney, Australia, cheered the mother's heart. "I have lately passed through deep waters of mortal belief and seem to see clearer than before the God-inspired work you have achieved for suffering humanity. It is so far above our comprehension at present, so high and holy, that it is only by small degrees we catch faint glimpses of the wonders of your revelation, of your sacrifices, cross-bearing, and wondrous pilgrimage for us. But you are now able to wear the crown, so we may rejoice exceedingly and humbly strive to follow your dear footsteps and thank God for you."